we gotta cut that. We gotta get that language out of there. Ooh, no, can't have that. We're attempting some technical things to get connected. And anyway, welcome to another hour of life, liberty, and all that jazz. I'm your host and commentator, Jeffrey Bennett. If all goes well, I hope to be nothing more than a host tonight. And you're listening to this program live on the 21st day of April, 2011, right here on RBN, Republic Broadcast Network. Now, having said all that, we have fought, my friends, many battles together. In some instances, some of us have fought side by side. Others have fought face to face. The end result is we all have a common enemy. And that enemy is not necessarily, not that I'm supporting the individual, you understand, not necessarily the individual who resides in the White House at any given point in time. That individual is merely nothing more than the tool of the handlers. Now, over the past several weeks, we've been going through a series of technical difficulties which have made this particular program nearly impossible to conduct. I am proud to say that after an exceedingly lengthy delay and a lot of hungry, thirsty listeners out there who are saying, "When's he coming back? When's he coming back?" Well, in the words of the movie, he's back. Roger Sales, welcome back to Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz.
Man, thanks, Jeff. I can't tell you how glad I am to be back. It's been 11 days that I've been offline here and having to go to a cyber cafe they call Locatorios down here. And the reason they call them loco is because they make you crazy being in them. No Skype. I can't get Skype. You're typing on Spanish keyboards. All the keys are in different places. All the programs are in Spanish. And it's been, it's been quite an experience, but we've got everything straight, and here we are. He's back, is right. So, thanks for the intro. As always, I want to start this with a prayer, though, and I'd like us all collectively to pray, because when we pray together, we're heard better. I'd like to say, Heavenly Father, I thank you for this opportunity to talk to your people, and that you would give me the thoughts that I can manifest into words that would fall on the ears of your people, tickle their ears, and reignite that flame of freedom that you've placed in their breasts. And no matter how they choose to go forward with what we learn and what you realize, I pray that you'd put over a mantle of protection over them as they go forward in whichever path they choose. Amen. So we'll get that out of the way. I guess, Jeff, that you've rerun those programs a few times here in the last week and a half or so.
Yes, we have. Obviously, as many of the audience knows, I've been kind of drifting in and out of illness, and allow me to take about 15 seconds here to inform everybody that my problem turned out not to be food poisoning. The idiot in the emergency room did not listen to a word I say and just threw a bunch of meds at me. But it did turn out that I had a urinary tract infection, relatively rare for a male to get it. The interesting thing is the doctor was such an idiot, Roger, he gave me pills that were made for a woman. Now, I'm not swishy in any stretch of the imagination, as you well know. So let's get it on. We're here.
Okay, man. Well, what I'd like to do is, first of all, start with some sort of a recap, because I want to tell the people listening that I know this is complicated information, okay? It went way over my head when I first heard it 18 years ago. I just knew that there was some truth there, and that's why I just lit onto it. It was the first time I'd known since the 60s that something was wrong, and I never knew what it was. And it's the first time I had a thread that I could follow, and I was obsessed with it 18 and a half years ago, and I'm obsessed with it tonight, okay? And in all those years, that obsession hadn't changed one single bit, hadn't subsided, it hadn't diminished, it's only gotten greater. So you've hopefully had a chance to listen to those programs more than once, and hopefully you've had some time to think on the concepts we went over. And what I wanted to try and do is at least go back and resimplify it and recover it, and maybe this illustration will help you. And since this is radio, the great medium of radio, and each one of us perceives what we hear in our own individual mind's eye. Let's collectively look, if you'll kind of look up in the front of your forehead there, and we're going to draw two columns, and one's on the left side and one's on the right side. And at the top, we're going to put God over on the left, and over on the right, we're going to put the federal government, because they think they're God. They act like God. Okay? So under God in the original Constitution, where according to Thomas Jefferson we get our rights from the Creator, then you come down in the original way the country was drawn up, and you were a state citizen first, and as Justice Story said, a state citizen was ipso facto by the mere fact that he was a state citizen. He was a citizen of the United States. So on that left-hand column, you've got God, state citizen, and federal or United States citizen. And we talked about the concept of jurisdiction, which is allegiance for protection, protection for allegiance. That was spelled out in the Wong Kim Ark case. So if you get your protection from God as a state citizen under the original Constitution, you owe your allegiance to God, and that's where the jurisdiction is. Now, what they did was they changed that, and we'll go over on that right-hand column where you got the federal government, and they took these former black slaves that in the law were things, and they gave them a political and a civil status, and they made them citizens of the United States first and citizens of the state second. And like it says in the slaughterhouse cases, to be a state citizen, there was one important element. They had to reside in the state to be a state citizen. So now you've got the federal government, you've got a citizen of the United States, and you've got a state citizen who is a resident underneath that. Once again, to our allegiance, allegiance for protection, protection for allegiance, that's jurisdiction. Those, that new form of citizenship, they get their protection from the federal government, and therefore they owe their allegiance to the federal government. And that's it, really, honestly, is as simple as that, okay? And that's not complicated to understand. All that's what's complicated for people is the fact that most people aren't really tuned into law stuff, and you've had some basic tenets of law that go all the way back to Rome. They're not difficult. But you're dealing with the knots that have been tied in your mind by these people with very, very sophisticated Pavlovian, Skinner, Jean, all of these sophisticated psychological techniques that go back 100 or more years. And that's what they've used on you through the education process, through the television, through everything. That's a lot of the reasons lawyers can't see this, is because they're taught in law school to think inside the box. And you got to think outside the box to really comprehend this. And when you get it, it's simple, okay? And if it's not simple for you, I'm going to say what we talked about the other night when that guy wrote in and said, quit talking so fast. Listen, this is all personal responsibility. You're the one that's got to make this information yours. If you want to have any semblance of freedom, whether you move on this stuff with the paperwork, no matter what you do with it, you've got to make this information yours. If you only go talk to your neighbors and show them this stuff, or your friends, you're doing something. So if you ask what can one person do, you can start learning this truth, and it's absolute ironclad truth, and you can carry it, and you can tell people, or you can write letters to the State Department and ask them about these two different citizenships that they list four or five times in the passport application. You know, early on in this process, one of the guys in our that was a student of John and Glenn's wrote to the Nebraska Attorney General, and he said, I'm born in Nebraska, and I'd like some sort of notification or certification that I'm a Nebraska citizen. And they sent this guy back a real nice, beautiful, gold embossed letter, declared that so and so was a citizen of the state in Nebraska. And so all of us started writing our states. Well, I wrote Florida's Attorney General, and I was asking him for something similar. And they wrote back, and they had a telling sentence in there that I've never forgotten. And it said, all matters of citizenship are handled by the Department of State. Okay? So Use that. Write the legal department at the State Department. Ask them. Include a copy of the passport application, or take those quotes out of there and say, what do these mean? Give me some legal specifics on rights and duties of these two apparently mutually exclusive statuses. So, you know, there's always something you can do. Call some radio shows. Get me on some other radio shows. Start telling people about this, because the only way that this is going to change is if the people get educated. And the only way that's going to happen, I've done my part. I'll continue to do my part. I absolutely promise you. This is my obsession, okay? But you got to do something too. And the very first thing you got to do is do a little bit of study. And you got to do what a lot of people don't do anything anymore of in these days, and that's think. You got to retrain yourself to think, okay? And I'll tell you the importance of this, if you want to go back and reiterate it a little bit. This is Satan's deepest, darkest secret. He had to reach way down in his bag of tricks, folks, to pull out something that would take only the second nation in the history of the world that had God-given rights and turn them into a bunch of happy slaves that don't even understand they're slaves. It goes back to the quote from Goethe. You know, Goethe wrote Faust. He was a German writer. And he said, and this is a really profound quote, and he said, there are none so helplessly enslaved as those who falsely believe they're free.
It's a big problem in this nation, and I'm afraid around the world, because too many people believe they're free, and they don't understand the freedom factor.
Yeah, they have no idea, and that's what this does. You see, it gives you an absolute basis of truth and fact, and it exposes these people to the absolute core, man. This is their deepest, darkest secret, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. All of the tricks that they pull are using this same technique or these same techniques. You know, I think I told you in one of the earlier shows that the one rule of thumb I've used for years, and it's never been wrong one time, is no matter what they tell you, you look 180 degrees in the opposite direction, and that's where you're going to find the truth, man. And it's always there, because that's the knot-tying technique that they're using to totally make you, tied up in knots in your mind. Yeah, there's a. I should make the announcement, Jeff. You know, I've used this last 11 days to finish my book. I've never written a book before. I've never considered myself to be much of a writer. Okay, but I started this back in 2005 after 9/11 was exposed. I thought maybe at that point the people would be ready to listen. And one of the things is I've gone back and re-edited it four or five times in the last 11 days when I didn't have an internet. It actually was very productive for me. I had the occasion several times to be around and really spend a couple of chunks of time with General Benton Parton. Many of you will know who he was. He came to the forefront after the Murrah building. He's the expert's expert on munitions. And Benton Parton's got a great story in the fact that he was given the charge of founding the Air Force Weapons Systems Division. And it wasn't even a division. They said, go start this. And he said, well, all right, well, the first thing I need to do, because the mandate of that division is to look 25 to 50 years in the future and kind of devise the kind of weapons systems that they're going to need to fight. And he said, well, heck, the first thing I had to do is figure out who we were fighting. And so he said communism was the big opponent, and so he said I became an ardent student of communism. And in all of this study, he said one thing that really, really surprised me, and it amazed me, and I thought about it, and I think it explains a lot of things. He said, you know, when we were studying Freud, they were studying Pavlov. Okay, and he said everybody knows about Pavlov's conditioned response with the dog, where they rang the bell and it fed the dog, and eventually they could ring the bell and the dog would salivate without the food, right? Well, that was only the first stage of Pavlov's experiment. And he said nobody knows about this other two stages. I don't know where he got the information. The second stage was they took the same dog in the same room and they devised a conditioned response where they'd turn on the light and they'd beat him with a stick. And there was a board parallel to the floor over in the corner that dog could dive under and not get beat with a stick. So they conditioned him to turning on the light and beating him with a stick. That was the second phase. The third phase was they turned on the light and they rang the bell at the same time. So my question to you is what do you think the dog did?
I don't know.
The dog stood in the middle of the room and shook. And psychologists call that a catatonic state. And okay,
you want afraid it was about to happen all over again.
Well, he didn't know what was going to happen, see? And that's exactly what I believe is the state of the American people right now. Why nobody does anything. Because they've got you with lies, disinformation, misinformation, stuff coming from every direction, and you don't know which way to turn or what to do, so you stand there and shake in a catatonic state.
Makes sense.
Okay? That's my own interpretation. You interpret it how you like. Okay? So, but I thought that it made a lot of sense, all right? So I wanted to get into some other stuff tonight, so we've talked about this. This is in the book. By the way, we're going to offer that book for sale. I don't know that we've got a price point on it yet, and the title of it is Government by the Treachery and Deception of Words. And I had an occasion before I left the United States when I had done all this and I was trying to live like a free man, and the noose kept getting tighter and tighter after 9/11 and all of the regulations from the Patriot Act were being enforced. And so I had a in my mind preparatory thinking of if I ever got confronted with this, how I was going to handle it. And fortunately, I never had to do that. But I wanted to tell the people really how simple this should be. I don't know that it would work like this. I know it works like this at administrative agencies. I don't know about a courtroom setting. But if you've got that properly executed, filed, certified affidavit, and you get charged with some regulation or some statute, and you walk into court, and you've got that affidavit that's never been rebutted. Mine's never been rebutted in almost 20 years, all right? And you give that to the judge, and you say, sir, this is a properly executed and unrebutted affidavit. I'm sure you understand that a person legally is an entity to whom the law ascribes rights and duties. The statute or regulation I'm charged with is written for citizens of the United States and residents, and this affidavit, unrebutted, plainly states that I'm neither of those. Since I receive no rights from the 14th Amendment, I owe no correlative duties because rights and duties are correlative. Therefore, this statute or regulation does not apply to me. Have a nice day. Now, if you know that information cold, you can't memorize that and go in and recite it. You got to understand this information and make it yours. And that's why I stress that so much to people, because it's not just it's a whole lifestyle. This information changes your literal life because it changes your perspective and it changes the way you think. Is that music I hear?
Yeah, it is. Music's coming in. When we come back in, I want to add a little comment to that, and it's something I've learned in doing this broadcast these last 16 years. Stay with us. Roger Sales will rejoin us in just a few moments.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Do you need help getting your child to behave? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'm willing to give away thousands of my best-selling total transformation programs for free. All you do is tell us how the program works for you and your family. Did it turn around your child's behavior? Did the screaming and arguing stop in your home? Is he doing better in school? The total transformation has helped hundreds of thousands of families. I want to see what it can do for you, and I'm willing to let you have it for free. Just order my program, use it with your child, then send me your feedback. I'll refund the purchase price of the program. you keep the Total Transformation Program forever, for free. You don't have to struggle with your child's bad behavior one more day, because now you can try my Total Transformation, and the program will be free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Growled like that besides Errol Garner. Welcome back to tonight's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. And tonight we're giving you all the jazz. Roger Sales has rejoined us in the studio. I want to, and Roger, come on here, and I'm going to ask you a question. We were talking before the break about the importance of living and breathing and understanding all of this, not just going in and making a statement. And that's not quite the way you put it, but I understood that because I've watched this in all the years you've known me to be on the air. People will listen to, they'll pick up little bits and pieces of that which you're sharing with them tonight and in the past episodes, and they'll pick up one little tiny out-of-context piece. They'll walk in to talk to some idiot at the Department of State or wherever, and they'll lay out that one little out-of-context piece. And all that shows you is you got excited about one thing. You got to get excited about a massive change in your life. And be prepared to envelop it and live it for the rest of your life.
And that's why this is so important. Not to step on you there, but that's why this is so important, because this is about your freedom, okay? This is about the freedoms that God gives you. And if you're not excited about that and don't want to learn how they've been taken away from you, then go be a happy slave and don't argue and complain about any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Pay your taxes. Don't bitch. Go comply with all their regulations and their regulatory agencies. And be happy, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, honestly, that's as simple as it is. I wanted to develop a couple of things here that I've come to realize over the years that I've been living this information and thinking about it. And the first thing that you start thinking about is, these guys are working on at least an 80-year timetable. Now, it becomes painfully obvious to me that the Civil War was started over taxation, or else the first shots wouldn't have been fired at Fort Sumter, South Carolina, which was one of the main imposts and excise ports in the whole eastern seaboard. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was only halfway through the war. Lincoln made a lot of statements before in his election before the war. He didn't give a flying flip about the slaves and the blacks. All right. He was public about that. You can go back and read them. So about halfway through the war, they switched to this slavery thing, and that becomes the whole basis of what they've taught people the Civil War is about. So now you can see the same way that in World War II, when they'd failed with the League of Nations at the end of World War I, thanks to Senator Lindbergh mainly, it failed by one vote in the Senate of being ratified, they started World War II, and halfway through World War II, they held that meeting out in San Francisco at the hotel with armed guards around it, and they rammed the UN through halfway through World War II when nobody else was looking and paying attention. Now, they did the same thing in the Civil War. They switched it to this black slavery thing. And what did they do that for? They knew this was being set up. This was set up in the 1860s, probably the 1850s when they substituted the 13th Amendment. All right? But they didn't institute it until the 1930s. So what does that tell you? These people are working 70 and 80 years ahead on a timetable. They're working ahead. You don't understand the words they're using, and you don't understand what they're doing. Who the hell do you think's going to win that fight?
It sure ain't going to be the average guy on the street.
Well, you can bet on that, man. And the other thing that had become very apparent to me over the years, their Achilles heel is their predictability. And the reason they're predictable is because they've pulled these stunts over and over and over again in history, and they always work. They've got so much at stake, they can't deviate away from something that's always worked. So if you study these creeps and their history, you're going to be able to predict what they're going to do, because they can't risk changing because the stakes are too high. So their predictability becomes their Achilles heel.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. And that's, you know, it's amazing how people don't understand that. That's not just government related. That, I think it's a perfect statement. Their Achilles heel is, what? How did you put it?
Their predictability.
Predictability.
I mean, all right, what did they do in 1860? You had one form of citizenship. They brought in another form of citizenship underneath it, and they switched you to it in the 30s, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What did they do in 9/11? They took planes off from an airport. They probably landed them at Fort Drum up there in New York. They took off other planes that were refueling planes, and they flew them into those buildings. They took off one, they had another one, and they switched them. You see, it's predictable. It's the same technique.
So, in other words, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Well, it's like I said, they got so much at stake, they can't deviate from what's always worked.
That's true.
Okay, so now we know there's two sets of laws, not one for us and one for them, as you've heard so many people say so many times. There's one set of laws for slaves, and there's one set of laws for free men. Now, I ask you candidly, which one do you want governing you?
Well, I'd rather not have it being governed by anything. I want to be free. Well, am I missing something here?
No, you're not. But you're not just going to go out and fill out a piece of paper and go file it and say, hey, I'm free. These are concepts. These are ways of living. These are ways of thinking. These are ways of changing your life to personal responsibility instead of relying on the government tit to suck on.
Makes sense. Here's our bottom of the hour break. Roger, stand by. When we come back, I'm going to let you open up with double barrels, brother.
All right. Thanks, brother.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With a Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream, or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendovite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendovite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
A little bit of Clint Eastwood coming back from the break. Roger Sales, let's pick up where we left off, man, because this gets ever more fascinating each time you're on. Well, it raises more questions than it answers, and that's you know what? That's good.
It always is, and in the words of Clint Eastwood, make my day, man.
Yeah.
I was going to say one thing that John used to really hammer on us, and it's something to ponder on, and that is, he said, if we can ever free the blacks, we can free us all. Because
yeah.
It's the blacks that have been used to enslave all of us.
Okay.
And they've got the welfare mentality in people's minds. And you got to get rid of that stuff, man. Plain and simple. I wanted to touch on mis and disinformation. Because everything I've told you is established legal concepts. It goes back to Rome. You can easily go research them and check them. You can go read the slaughterhouse cases. You can go read U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark. You can see that statement in the dissenting opinion by Chief Justice I can't think of his name right now, that wrote the dissenting opinion there, saying that we were under the feudal system and brought it into this country for the first time since England was being relieved of its inconvenience. I listen to the radio a lot, even down here in Argentina, and I hear some of these guys talking and hawking their books and stuff. And this isn't an ad hominem attack, okay, but I want to bring this out just as a perfect illustration. There's a guy with a book out there, two guys with a book that they're hawking. I've heard them on almost every major show. And I heard this guy say one day that you're under admiralty law because you were gestated for 9 months in your mother's womb in a water sack. And when that water sack broke, you were brought into the world down a canal. And that's why when you came into the world, you're under admiralty law. And I'm going to tell you, I turned off the radio, and I'll never listen to another thing that guy has to say. The other thing, because, I mean, that's just, if you have any tendency to believe that, what I want you to do is run down to your nearest DVD store and go rent the longest playing DVD you can find of Star Trek, and you and Captain Kirk and Bones and Spock can go out there in Admiralty Law Land, all right, and spend as much time as you want out there. Because you're going to be right there with Gene Roddenberry, because it's science fiction. Okay? The other theory that this guy's putting out is that they own you because you're using their currency. Now, it doesn't take much of one step of logic to say the U.S. currency is the world's reserve currency. Why isn't the IRS, OSHA, EPA, BATF, and all these other administrative agencies? Argentina's got the second most amount of Federal Reserve notes in the world, I'm told. Why aren't they down here? Why aren't they over in Europe? Why aren't they over in China? China's got a huge deficit, a surplus of that stuff over there. Why aren't they over there enforcing these regulations if that's how they own you and that's how they're taking jurisdiction of you? In law, that's called a non sequitur, and that means that does not follow, because that line of logic, man, with $5 you can't even get a cup of Starbucks coffee with that one. All right, so I mean, it's just use your brains, people. These people have a legal peg they're hanging their hat on, and I poured my heart out three programs in a row. I gave you all of the references. I gave you all of the legal sites you can go read and check for yourself. You don't have to believe me. In fact, I used to tell people, don't believe me. You go look it up, because that's the only way you're going to make the information yours.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's pretty much what I've challenged people for years. You've heard it. Don't listen to a damn thing I say. Take the basics of it and go do your own homework.
I wanted to make a couple other points here that I think are real important for the way people think, and that is they trick us with generalizations while they're using real specific information, like we covered in those three programs. What's a resident? Where does that come from? Where does that jurisdiction? What legal theory is backing that up? Okay? And we go in and use these real generalizations. Let me give you an example. How many times have you heard say, the government this, the government that? Well, they're not the government. We're the government. We elect leaders to go up there and represent us. They appoint agents. They are agents of government. And as agents of government, they've got specific duties that they have to perform, and they sign stuff that spells out that. And when they act outside of those duties, they're personally liable in lawsuits. People have won a lot of money from these people when they get outside of their jurisdictions and try and enforce these regulations. So you've got to come back and start thinking with specificity, okay? You can't get trapped in generalizations. I think that's a real important point. Let me tell you something else that I picked up from Pastor Peters, if this is going to help you out. These are these little tidbits that I've spent years listening to radio and picked up. He said something one night that hit me so hard I've never forgotten it. Everybody's scared of the IRS, right? Big, intimidating IRS. They're going to come take your stuff, right? Let me tell you what he said that night. He said, you serve the one you fear. Now, you ponder that for a while, okay? Who are you serving? Who do you fear?
That's interesting.
Let's go back and get another biblical quote here. Woe to you lawyers, for you've hidden the keys of knowledge from the people.
Wow.
You don't think that stuff I told you for 3 hours is hiding the keys of knowledge? Hell, even the lawyers don't know this stuff. I put this presentation in front of 11 of them personally. Not one of them ever came back and disputed a single fact. Every one of them went back and researched it. None of them had ever been exposed to it in all of their law school or their legal practice. Okay? So I want to read another thing that I committed to memory years ago. My dear friend in Atlanta, Patrick Henry, used to dress up in old colonial outfits and go to all our meetings.
Yeah.
And he had a big ostrich plume on a three-point hat, and he'd go up to all the women and he'd go, I don't know about you, but my pantyhose are killing me. So, and it was because of him that I memorized this quote. And he said, this is from the Declaration of Independence. This is one of the complaints against the king. He has erected multitudes of offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass us and eat out our substance.
And that, to me, was one of the most profound accusations in the Declaration. And as I've said to people for so many years, why and how is it any different in this nation today?
It isn't, and that's my point. He has erected multitudes of offices, all of these administrative agencies. He's sent hither swarms of officers. They're everywhere, and now they're arming all of them to harass us and eat out our substance. I think Thomas Jefferson's one of the most brilliant minds the country's ever produced, personal opinion. I want to read you some other wisdom from history here. All right? And then I'm going to quiz you, Jeff, because you're the guy that's on with me.
All right. We'll try it.
Okay. Power and law are not synonymous. In truth, they're frequently in opposition and irreconcilable. There's a God's law from which equitable laws of man emerge and by which men must live if they're not to die in oppression, chaos, and despair. Divorced from God's eternal and immutable law, established before the founding of the suns, man's power is evil no matter how the noble words with which it is employed or the motives urged when enforcing it. Men of good will, mindful therefore of the law and laid down by God, will oppose governments whose rule is by men. And if they wish to survive as a nation, they will destroy the government which attempts to adjudicate by the whim of venal judges. Now I'm going to ask you, who do you think said that, and when do you think it was?
Oh, man.
Was that pretty truthful?
Well, absolutely. And as I sit there listening to the words, and you talk about venal judges, and we talk about powers and laws, and the problem is, people in this nation refer to us as a nation of laws. Well, there's the laws there, but unfortunately we're being controlled by the powers.
Well, they are laws.
They're
slave laws that are
exactly
controlling you. They just didn't tell you there was this other set. They like to live by them, though. Well, you'll never guess it, so I'll tell you, it's probably one of the greatest spokesmen in the history of the world. Statesman, excuse me, is the word I want.
Cicero.
His name was... That's exactly correct. And those words, I don't know exactly when they were written, but he lived, for those of you who are not familiar with Cicero, he lived from 106 to 43 B.C.
See, it gelled instantly when you said statesman, because I don't consider any of our politicians today to be statesmen.
Well, Ron Paul probably is, and there's been a couple along the way. Wright Patman was another one.
Sure.
Voorhees, Jerry Voorhees from California, who tried to get rid of the Federal Reserve. By the way, this young upstart politician got financed by the Rockefellers that defeated Jerry Voorhees. You know what his name was? Richard Milhouse Nixon, correct. So that was one Cicero. Let's jump forward a few hundred years. If man, through fear, fraud, or mistake, should in terms renounce or give up any natural right, the eternal law of reason and the grand end of society would absolutely vacate such renunciation. The right to freedom, being the gift of God, is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave. They named a beer after that guy. His name's Samuel Adams.
You know, the words become so powerful, no matter who they come from. But where are the people that speak this way today?
Well, they've been in public school, man. They don't know how to do this.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, here's another one. This one's very, very... All these quotes, by the way, are in this book, all right? We have stricken the shackles from 4 million human beings, parentheses, black slaves, that's my addition, and brought all laborers to a common level, not so much by the elevation of former slaves as by practically reducing the whole working population, white and black, to a condition of serfdom. While boasting of our noble deeds, we are careful to conceal the ugly fact that by our iniquitous money system, we have nationalized a system of oppression which, though more refined, is no less more cruel than the old system of chattel slavery. That was the Go West young man guy, Horace Greeley.
Horace Greeley.
Huh?
Yeah,
so these are powerful, man. They're very powerful, okay? Let me give you another one. This one was done at the end of century before last by a congressman. The imposition of the income tax will corrupt the people. It will bring in its train the spy and the informer. It will necessitate a swarm of officials with inquisitorial powers. It will be a step towards centralization. It breaks another canon of taxation in that it is expensive in its collection and cannot be fairly imposed. And finally, it is contrary to the traditions and the principles of Republican government. That was U.S. Representative Robert Adams. I'm not sure where he was from, but that statement was uttered on January 26 of 1894. You think this guy had any foresight?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think of the words of, you know, certainly the ones that were most well known by people like Patrick Henry, but they were somewhat more generic. I think of the words of Charles Lindbergh Sr., who you referenced earlier in the program tonight. You know, everybody thinks about Sonny Boy because he flew, you know, from New York to Paris, et cetera, et cetera. His father was the brilliant mind in that package.
No question. And boy, some of his speeches are powerful if you ever read them. He fought these guys tooth and toenail every minute of his adult life. Okay. Let me read you a little limerick here. And I don't know who wrote it, okay? But I've always liked it. It stuck with me. It says, "No man escapes when freedom fails. The best men rot in filthy jails. And those that cried, appease, appease, are hanged by those they tried to please."
I've heard that somewhere, and I don't know where.
It's powerful stuff. Okay, yeah. Now I'm going to read you something else from the book here. This is going back to Rome. This is powerful, too. Okay? The Roman law. The first 200 years of Rome, it was a republic. It had a system of law known as the jus, that's J-U-S, civile, C-I-V-I-L-E. Jus means law, civile means citizen, or the law of the citizen. Foreigners had no standing in the courts of the jus civile. After 200 years, the Senate passed a statute that created another system of law for the foreigners known as the jus gentium, that's spelled G-E-N-T-I-U-M. But it's pronounced gensum, at least according to John. That's the jus law, gensum of the foreigner. The law was presided over by the praetor, all the laws in Rome. He sat for 1 year only. He was appointed. And then a different praetor was appointed in his place. The presiding praetor would publicly state which laws that he would enforce during his tenure. As a general rule, he would adopt the law of the previous praetor, but usually they would make slight changes. Over several hundred years, however, these changes combined to become very substantial. To contract under the jus civile, the law of the citizen, it was a very formal process, and if all the formality was not strictly adhered to, there would be no legal contract, and that is, it wouldn't be legally enforceable. The main bodies of foreigners in Rome were foreign merchants. Merchants did not have standing in the court of the jus civile, and they were not tied to these formalities. They had, by their customs, provided a more abbreviated, easier, and speedier way of establishing and enforcing contract. It's called the law merchant, by the way. The law merchant we call today the Uniform Commercial Code. As the citizens of Rome saw the quick and easy way that the foreign merchants were able to contract and avail themselves of self-help, the praetor, under pressure from Rome's citizens, adopted more and more of these ways of contracting in his court of the foreigners, the jus gentium. Under the legal fiction that citizens of Rome were foreign merchants, the citizens saw how easy it was for the foreign merchants to contract, and they were desirous to avail themselves of the merchant's legal way of contracting. And on that legal fiction that a citizen of Rome was a foreign merchant, they, the citizens, were able to utilize the merchant's law. In only 200 years after its adoption, there was no jus civil, only the jus zensum was operative, and the citizen had none of the rights that he had as a citizen under the jus civil. He was just another merchant bound by the law of the foreigner. Today, it's totally encompassed in the law we call the Uniform Commercial Code. So do you see how it changed? Do you understand how that relates analogously to the United States? 200 years, we had God's law and constitutionally protected rights. And through this trick of this citizenship change, they've brought the Uniform Commercial Code right in here, and that's what's governing you, the law merchant, the law of merchants that goes back thousands of years to the Phoenicians and even before. And do you want to know how you know it's the Uniform Commercial Code? Let me tell this to some of these jokers out there. Because they have to use the Uniform Commercial Code, because that's the body of law that handles negotiable paper, and that's the whole basis of the financial system. Why wouldn't they use the same body of law for the financial system where they're raping the whole world that they're using to enslave you?
It would make sense, because it all serves the same purpose.
Let me read you another quote here. This comes back to you learning this information and making it yours. Okay? I've worked for 18 and a half years, total dedication. I'm a lucky man tonight, because I get to realize my life's main goal by teaching you people. And I dare say there's very few men that ever get to do that in their lifetime. I dare say there's very few men that even have or know what the hell their life's goal is. So I get warm fuzzies from doing this, man. Okay? Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence.
Freedom takes persistence.
Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education alone will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent.
Amazing stuff.
That's anonymous, by the way. Now, I
could have been spoken by you. I don't know if you have time, and I'm not sure if we have time. I received a question that I certainly will forward over to you later tonight. It is from a listener, and if you're not in a position to answer this at the present time, or if we don't have enough time, he says, Jeff, could you ask Roger, doesn't a person need a ruling one way or the other instead of just filing an affidavit with the court clerk? Does it not just set there as an open docket? I mean, to me, it seems like you could register just about anything in court, but to have a ruling, there has to be a hearing and a decision or ruling declared by the judge. Does this fit into what we're talking about?
Well, it does. But first of all, you're not going to get any judges to rule on this. But you got to have, before you're going to go in and try and get some sort of a ruling, you got to have some sort of a basis. And the reason you put that affidavit in an affidavit form is it's the absolute highest form of truth in law. An unrebutted affidavit bypasses the rules of evidence, okay? They can't keep it out of evidence if it's executed properly and it's filed. And it's like that question I asked you the other night, Jeff. Why do you file it in the property records? Where the hell does the IRS file a lien?
Right.
You're their property. You got to go in and make a public declaration, and you do that by making it open and notorious. And if nobody goes and reads the property law books, that's not your problem. You've got it there.
Exactly.
And you go to the clerk of the court, and you get it certified. And then you start sticking it under people's nose, and you go, this is an affidavit. Can you rebut it with an affidavit properly executed, properly sworn, that rebuts this under penalties of perjury? And if they can't, yours stands.
Very interesting.
Okay.
Well, now, there's going to be more. I'm going to forward some emails over to you tonight. And obviously, we got a number of people asking if you have a website. The answer is no. Roger does not. And but all this information that we're sharing with you certainly can be picked up through the archives here at RBN. Also, we will be making the book available very quick, very soon.
It is finished.
Recall if you got to do it or not. You have another upcoming appearance.
One of the really nice, thank you for leading into that, one of the really nice things that's happened is I've got a very dear friend down here in Argentina that I've crossed paths with. His name's Adrian Salbucci, and a number of you have seen some. He's very high profile the last year and a half or so, and Adrian heard these broadcasts, and he called me the other day when I didn't have Skype. He called me on the phone, which is expensive down here, and he has asked me to be a co-host with him. He's been offered a show on another network, American Freedom Network, and on Friday night, the 29th, we're going to start from, I believe, 10 o'clock to midnight on Friday nights. And so Adrian and I are going to get in there and kick it around. And the guy amazes me. He's got, when it comes to geopolitical stuff and history, he pulls out stuff that amazes me. And we've had many long talks on the phone mostly. We've met once. And I'll tell you, we're kindred spirits here. Let me close because I know we're getting close to it. And I want to say that, you know, being off for 11 days, it brought us to this broadcast this night on this very special weekend. And I've told people for years, you know, it's no coincidence that Jesus was crucified 3 days after he kicked the money changers out of the temple. Okay? And it's the same bunch doing the same damn thing today, just much more sophisticated. So we're going to kick them out of the temple, or their temple's going to collapse on them on their own arrogance and hubris. And the question is, when we kick the money changers out of the temple this time, just who's going to get crucified? And that's the question I want to end on, and that's a question I want you to think about and ponder.
Excellent. Excellent. We do reach the end of our time. Hey, man, I know we're talking about bringing you back again. We're going to open up phone lines next time and go for some Q&As with the audience. But you know, that's all well and good if one good friend of ours back in from Brooklyn doesn't decide to monopolize the entire hour.
let me end this fireside chat, pipe that music, pot it down just a minute, and something I heard from Eleanor Roosevelt, and I didn't particularly like her, but I love this statement. She said, small minds talk about people, medium minds talk about events, and large minds talk about concepts. Which one do you want to be?
That's it. Roger Sales, as always, thanks. I'll talk to you a little later, brother. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for sharing your valuable time with us tonight. Lord willing, we'll be back again with you tomorrow night here on Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. And until that time, without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming.